All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 297 of the DFO Rundown, brought to you by Bet365. Welcoming them as our sports betting partner just in time for the 2024 NHL playoffs. We'll be here with Bet365 to provide you all the news, analysis, lines, and betting options for the playoffs until one team is left standing in June. That's Bet365.com. I am Jason Greger, as we welcome in Frank Saravalli, who is in Vancouver as the NHL playoffs have begun. Home teams are 6-0 so far, Frank. And man, we have seen some doozy games. There was just the madness in Winnipeg yesterday, really loud there. Obviously, Vancouver able to score two goals in 12 seconds. Dakota Joshua, we talked about him as a guy who we felt could be an unsung hero for Vancouver, scored a pretty big goal for them. You had Tampa and Florida in a slobber knocker kind of low scoring event. Boston crushes Toronto. Carolina has Freddie Anderson steal them game one. It's been a pretty amazing start. And even Matt Rempe getting the first goal of the playoffs for the Rangers, setting that place into chaos. So, man, no shortage of stories, and only six games in.
A couple boring games, too. A couple games that weren't as good. But yes, Sunday, I think, more than made up for it. And by the way, remember there was talk before the playoffs started, should Matt Rempe be in the lineup? I don't know. I think he probably answered that in game one.
Oh, he's physical. It is amazing how, like, Ranger fans love that guy. He's a cult hero, which is great. You know what? He's not their best player. Panarin's their best guy. But you know what? Matt Rempe, hey, all that matters, he chipped in. No one's expecting him to score a lot of goals, but he's physical. You score a goal like that, it lifts your entire bench. The arena goes bananas. And I don't care in any sport. When you have a guy who does something he's not supposed to do at the most important time of the year, it just elevates everybody.
Well, how about the same, I guess you could say the same, a little bit of a different scale in terms of impact of player, but Dakota Joshua, how many times every year we go into a playoff trying to predict who the guys are from lower in the lineup that'll find a way to be impact guys? And Joshua probably should have scored 20 goals this year. He missed 19 games, took a huge step forward this year into turning himself into a player to be reckoned with. And he puts himself right out there in game one for the Canucks.
Oh yeah, he was excellent. What about the Winnipeg game? Are you kidding me? If you're the Colorado Avalanche, I'm not sure, you know, kind of what you're feeling today. You're like, wow, we had a lot of shots. We controlled the game, but we score six goals on Hellebuck and we lose, right? Like you score six goals on the best defensive team in the NHL on the guy who's going to win the Vezina, and you still don't win. Like, there's got to be some concern there. Defensively, you know, when they gave up chances, they were grade A chances. And then, you know, their goaltender at Georgiev just couldn't make a timely save when needed.
You would think that for a team, if it's going to be a track meet, that would heavily favor the Colorado Avalanche. And yet the Jets win game one. I'll tell you what they're feeling today, and they're not going to say it, of course, but I'm sure they're asking themselves, can we get enough saves from our goalie to make this a series?
Well, how about the Adam Lowry, Nathan McKinnon matchup? Adam Lowry outscores him 2-1. Like we talked about at the start of the series, Frank, I said, the fact that you have, there's very few third lines in the league that you can feel comfortable saying, you know what, we'll go head to head. Now, they don't expect Lowry to outscore McKinnon, let's be honest. But, you know, the fact that, you know, the Jets outscored them 6-3, 5-on-5. And Lowry, you know, it's 2-1. McKinnon ends up the night, you know, -2, 5-on-5. That's a big win for the Winnipeg Jets in that department.
You know where Lowry finished on my Selke ballot?
Second.
Third.
Yeah, I think it was fourth on mine.
Just, I think I said it before, and look, I know it's one game. You try and not make any, not make too many judgments based off of one game. But in some respects, the style of that game kind of ended up a little bit how I thought it might. And I just think when you have the better goalie and you are allowing fewer chances than the opposition, you're going to be in a spot to win almost every time.
Yeah. Like that series though, man, what I love the whiteout. I just love the playoffs in any building. Like you go to Nashville, it's really loud there. Like there's very few buildings that aren't loud come playoff time, but there are some that are just a little bit, not so much louder, but also more consistently energetic.
That's the best way to say it. It's every single second of every game matters in Winnipeg. It matters in Edmonton and Vancouver, and pick the market. It's just different. It is.
And now we got four games again. It's going to go that way. You have the two series that have yet to start, Dallas, Vegas, Edmonton, and LA. But, you know, you look at the two, Frank, let's start, I guess, with the earlier games tonight. You have Toronto, Boston. Toronto obviously did not like their game one whatsoever. Maybe a lot of their guys are saying, you know what, maybe we're too hyped up. They weren't disciplined. They took, too many undisciplined penalties. Although early on in the game, I think it's more the fact that if you don't get anything from your top guys, it's really hard to win. And that's what happened in Toronto. And, you know, Matthews was probably the best of their top guys. I know William Nylander didn't play and he's expected to play in game two, but they definitely need more from Marner specifically if they have any hopes of getting back in that series.
They need more from all their top guys. I don't care if Austin Matthews was on paper their best player. The team still scored one goal. This is a team built and paid for handsomely to score goals. You can't get to the playoffs and then all of a sudden forget how to score or clench up. And unfortunately, we've seen this story time and time again. And look, I know the Leafs lineup is banged up. And that's a big part of, I think, why game one was as lopsided as it was. But moving forward, how many games are we going to see of the Leafs scoring two or fewer? It's not rocket science or breaking news from my end to say that it's not going to be a recipe for success. They're not going to win. They're not built to win games 2-1. They don't have the back end and they don't have the goaltending. So you've got to score. They've got to be putting 3, 4, 5 in the back of the net every single night. And too often this team over the last 5 playoff runs with all of the talent that they have, how many times have they scored 2 or fewer?
That's a good question. I have to look it up. I don't know.
A lot.
Yeah.
Is the answer.
Yeah. What about the Bruins? And, you know, there's lots of talk about their goaltending situation. Swayman was very good when called upon in game one. Do you go to Allmark? Do you rotate? Or would you go like a 2-2 split? What would you do?
I would go to Allmark right away. If you're trying to get him into the mix, you don't want to wait 6 days or 5 days into the playoffs to get him going again. That's just my view. If you're actually going to rotate, if that's your plan, then do it. I'm not surprised that Swayman ended up being the game one guy because he's their long-term answer, right? That's the guy they're trying to keep. And Omark was the guy they tried to trade at the deadline, and he blocked it. So that's their solution. The question is, are they actually trying to just run with one guy, or are they planning to rotate? And we haven't yet gotten that answer. And it seems like, you know, Jim Montgomery has been, I guess, a little bit coy about what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, Frank, the Leafs, since Matthews and company came in, they played 51 playoff games. They've scored 2 goals or fewer in 24 of those games, and they've scored 3 or less in 34. So
24 divided by 51.
Yeah, it's just under
47%. 47% of the time with Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares, they've scored 2 or fewer goals in 47% of their playoff games.
Yeah, and they're 4-20 in those 24.
Shocker. Shocker that they're 4-20. So isn't that it in a nutshell? Isn't that the Leafs playoff demons? It's not that it seems by that margin that they've actually done a pretty decent job defending in that stretch, oddly enough. But 2 or fewer in 47% of your games? I mean, the Sharks, like, that's what the Sharks would do in the playoffs. That's what the Sharks do in the regular season.
Yeah, and they're 7-27 in the 34 games when they score 3 or fewer. So not much better.
Yeah, that's the recipe right there. Just draw it on a chalkboard, score more goals.
Yeah,
but there's no explanation for it. It has to just be some kind of mental block that you get to the playoffs and you can't score. You've got the most gifted goal scorer potentially ever in NHL history. Matthews is on that track. He's on track to pass Ovechkin, provided that he plays the same number of games. How do you not score more? 1 goal against the Bruins on Saturday night to open up the playoffs?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, the onus is on them. They're definitely, we'll see it. They're big guns. You got to win. Now, the Islanders, Frank, they're probably the team who lost that's the most disappointed. Like, everybody's disappointed, but they all played, and Freddie Anderson stood on his head. And I'm like, that's the game that if you look back in this series, it'll be like, geez, you win that game, maybe you put some doubt in. But I don't see how Carolina can play worse than they did in front of their goaltender in another game this series. I think it's going to be really hard for the Islanders now. Give them credit. They played really well. They controlled lots of that game. But at the end of the day, they didn't win. And I don't think Carolina is going to get overwhelmed like that 5-on-5 most games in this series.
Look, I'm not predicting anything, but I felt pretty, you know, that's the type of result that you watch that game and you go, oh, I picked that Carolina team to sweep. That if you get a result like that after playing like that, it probably bodes pretty well. It was kind of like, I kind of had this feeling during the Canucks game last night when they scored to open the second period, the Lindholm goal. And it was like, that's a gift from Saros. If you don't take advantage of that, scoring from distance on a somewhat nothing opportunity, a 1-on-2, if you don't take advantage of something like that, you're going to be in a tough spot in the series. And they do. And you have to seize hold of the limited windows and opportunities that you get. And Carolina, when you don't have your A game, which is going to happen from time to time, if you can rely on your goalie, then you're off and running from there.
Yeah. Yeah, but man, Freddie Anderson, he gives Hurricanes fans belief that if he can stay healthy, they can go on a real deep run. He was excellent.
He's been excellent since he came back. His numbers are jaw-droppingly good.
Does Patrick, are you going back to Varlamov?
No. You got to see Sorokin, right?
Well, you think so, but like Varlamov didn't play bad in that game, right?
So no, but I'm just thinking for the long term. What kind of message are you sending to your franchise goalie?
Or maybe the Islanders are going to take a page out of Florida and Washington's book. Because I remember that their guys, when they went all the way to the Cup, they didn't start the first few games. So we'll see.
How about that? I mean, that's... remember Florida last year? Alex Lyon was their game one starter.
Yep. Grubauer started both and then got pulled in the second game. And then Holtby came in and carried him all the way to the Cup in 18. So, yeah, you never know. Let's get to the final two series, Frank, that start tonight. Dallas and Vegas. And it looks like, you know, the entire band. We'll see if Petrangelo is ready to go after the appendectomy or not. But looks like Stone, shocking, is ready to play. Maybe even Wild Bill Will Carrier also in. You know, Dallas comes in. They've been a really good team, arguably the most consistent team all season. And they got home ice. What do you make of this series? What is the storyline you're watching most?
Well, from the game one perspective, it has to be Mark Stone, right? Does he play or does he not? Do the Golden Knights just have balls of absolute steel? Which they might. I mean, look, there's going to be a riot in the general manager's meeting if Mark Stone plays game one. It's just taking everyone's face and smashing it into the table and rubbing their nose in a big pile of shit. You can say whatever you want about the MRIs, the imaging, the doctor's reports, whatever it is that you want to say, hey, look, Mark Stone is completely healthy. Then he would have been completely healthy to play in game 81, 80, 82. Where was he? He didn't just magically get healthier. His spleen all of a sudden didn't go from 97% to 100%. In the last 4 days.
Now, did he actually, now I haven't got confirmation. Did he have his spleen removed?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Cause I say, actually, if he had it removed, that's, and people can live without a spleen.
Oh yeah. That's
the recovery from removing your spleen is actually quicker and easier than if you repair it. Interesting enough. So
it's called a splendectomy.
Yes.
Dr. Saravalli putting on his white coat this morning on a Monday. To my knowledge, that has not happened. And if it happened, wouldn't he have been back weeks ago? I think doctors kind of, look, again, I'm not one, but they don't really like to remove something unless they absolutely have to.
100%.
And you're better off having your spleen than not. I think that's pretty clear also.
100%. And so, again, I don't discount that there was an actual injury. I never discount that. I think the issue with the rule is the recovery time is massively gray. Like, it's a huge gray area because no player will recover the exact same. How Frank's, you know, now, and elite level athletes do recover different than average Jack and Jill. We all know that, right? They go in, they're in better shape to begin with, so you got a better chance of recovering quicker from most things. But even then, not every player will have the same timeline of recovery. You just don't. And so I think it's not so much that I've never questioned the fact. I don't, like, when people are saying, oh, they just faked an injury, I don't buy that for a second. He's legitimate injured. But it's the way the rule is written, and they haven't done anything wrong based on the rule. So we should point that out. They've done nothing wrong. We can talk about, does it not look good? Sure. But they've done nothing wrong based on how the rule is, because people always talk about don't rush guys back. So now you take extra time. It is to your benefit, clearly, because there's no cap in the playoffs. And that, to me, Frank, is the easiest solution. If teams really cared, then they would change it. And I'll say this again. If Vegas loses in round one, no one's going to complain in the NHL, because they're going to say, look, there was no advantage gained. Now, if they win a series even, I think that's when you might have some say, okay, wait a sec, We got to find a way. And you and I have talked about this, Frank. You know what? Your 20-man roster has to be cap compliant, right? Your game day roster in the playoffs, your 20 skaters. You could do that if you want. And that still gives teams a little bit of leeway, right? Because in the regular season, it's 21 to 23 usually that are on the roster, right? So you could do that if they wanted, but I think that was
originally my thought process and solution on how to fix this is just ice a lineup that's cap compliant. But now that I'm looking at it from this perspective and watching Vegas go through this right now with Stone, I don't know who exactly is going to be in their lineup tonight, but let's just say that Stone does play. Okay. Let's use the hypothetical. What if they have Alec Martinez sitting as a healthy scratch at $5.25 million? Yeah, I don't like the idea that it's just the 20 guys in your lineup, because you'd never be able to have that guy sitting in the press box to jump into a series at any point if you want him to, because you never would have been able to get to that point with your roster.
But no, but if a guy's on LTIR, that's the whole point of LTIR, right?
Well, no, but when that's what I'm saying is once Stone comes back, then your roster is really like $92 million in cap in an $83.5 million league. Your 23-man roster is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You would have never been able to bring in the other guys that you brought in had you not been able to leverage that. Like, you made significant transactions is the point. You can't just then get to the playoffs and say, oh, well, you know, we have all these guys and we're just going to use the luxury of taking one guy who's older and just park him as a healthy scratch. And it's not going to matter, because that would have never been cap compliant during the regular season. Well, you would have never had the ability to activate Stone.
Well, see, I think it's Hurdle that they wouldn't have acquired. I still think they would have acquired Hanifin because he was only a 1.4 million cap.
Yeah, it's Hurdle for sure.
Yeah. So, but Martinez was already there, right? So that's, you know, and he comes out basically because of Hanifin.
All the math, but my point to the whole thing is, it's still the math of $83.5 million, and just because, like, you can't just take all of a sudden Martinez out of the picture and say, oh, he's a healthy scratch tonight, he doesn't count. That's not how it works. It's not how it should work in the playoffs.
Yeah.
How many teams can have the luxury of a $5.25 million player sitting as a healthy scratch? No one, because their cap situation would have never let them get to that point.
Yeah. But I think it would have. It's the Hurdle acquisition they wouldn't have had. I think once they acquired Hanifin, Martinez's ice time was going down regardless.
Oh my God, you're missing the point. It doesn't matter about the position. They're taking a $5.25 million player out of their cap and lineup if you have it just be in the playoffs, just the 20 guys.
Yeah. So then what's your solution?
My solution is, I think you probably need to carry the cap all the way through. You've got to have a cap that's still applicable in the playoffs, and you've still got to have a roster. You can carry black aces. You can sub guys in and out off of the roster. Excuse me, as you need.
But during just to play counter then, Frank. Mm-hmm. So let's say you pull them off LTIR. In the regular season, you can carry a 20-man roster if you choose. So then they'd still be cap compliant. They would just put those guys not on the roster, right? Like, say they're black aces then. Say we're going to send them down. Because no one else could claim him. He couldn't play for your team in the playoffs. I'm not sure that solves anything. Right?
Well, they still wouldn't be cap compliant, I don't think.
Without Martin. Yeah, there'd have to be another forward. I agree with you. It'd be another forward that would have to come off.
And it would have to be a significant one.
Yeah, like I'd have to, it'd be a fun, you know, I'll go look at it. And people have to remember when they do the math on that, Hanifin's a 1.4 cap hit and Hurdle is only the percentage of his cap after. It's not his full, like people go on Cap Friendly and they see his total and they're like, oh my God, they're at 100 and some million. No, they're not. Yeah, you at least have to be accurate in your assessment. Hanifin is a 1.4 cap hit for Vegas because that's what, when he was acquired, that's what he had left. That's what he is for the remainder of this season. Obviously next year he's much higher, right? And it's the same as Hurdle, but
the point remains true. If Mark Stone is healthy today, April 22nd, why wasn't he
should have been healthy? I agree. Yes.
Why wasn't he healthy good 7 days ago? He was skating and he had a non-contact jersey on.
Yeah. An easy solution to me, Frank, would be if a player is not, is not on your active roster, because guys healthy scratch guys when they're cap compliant, right? Like you look at Edmonton's roster, you look at Winnipeg, Vancouver, lots of guys were healthy scratch. So you could say, if you're not on the roster for the final, whatever, pick 3 days, five, whatever it has to be, then you can't play in the first round of the playoffs. You could do that.
All I'm saying is whatever the method to fix it is, I think the competitive integrity of the NHL is in serious question this week with Mark Stone if he plays game one. I don't think it's going to magically be better if he sits out game one and plays game two.
Yeah.
But man, they do not care. And frankly, that's exactly how I'd run my organization too. If no one's stopping us, why wouldn't we do this? But the fact that this has happened yet again and totally different injuries, but to your point, murky timeline, you know, the doctors that you had spoken to said 2 to 3 months for Stone. It's basically exactly 2 months to the day since he last played a game. That's not the point here. The point is that he was hurt. You went out and acquired players that are an addition to your cap using the LTIR. And then magically the week before the playoffs, just like the same as last year, he trots out for practice and then all of a sudden is ready to go.
Yeah.
I'd say it is a miracle in healing is what we're seeing, that the timelines just shrug and they say they just happen to match up. It's just a total coincidence that this player happened to be ready for the start of the playoffs.
And I think it's a bigger issue than Vegas, because Vegas is playing by the rules that are there, right? That's what they're doing. They're playing by the rules. And you talked about competitive integrity. I think that's very well worded. And to me, it comes then, does Gary Bettman, do the other owners feel the need to do it? My gut feeling, Frank, I don't think they will.
I think there's going to be enough of an outcry from general managers at their next meeting, because I told you before, Kelly McCrimmon was called on the carpet the last time and teams were not happy. It's managers who then push the envelope to then make the NHL act.
So what percentage do you think there'd be a change for next season? Or is this something that
negotiated CBA change that you'd have to bargain with the Players Association on in order to make it happen? What is the NHL willing to give up in order to do that? Probably a pretty small likelihood that something like that happens, but would be on the table for 2026.
All right. We'll see. And then the final series, of course, LA and Edmonton. Some interesting line combinations coming out of LA, Frank, to start it. They're really kind of splitting up a lot of their guys, at least if we go by what practice is. You know, you got the Lafreniere playing with Kopitar and Kempe, Moore, Danault, Arvidsson. Fiala's playing with Lizotte and Lewis. And then you have Byfield, Dubois, and Grundstrom. It's kind of odd to me. Why wouldn't you have Byfield, Fiala, and Dubois, and then just play Grundstrom, Lizotte, and Lewis? And maybe that happens, but you know, it's kind of interesting to see. And I'm curious how LA goes into Edmonton. They've won game one the last 2 years. Edmonton can't win game one to save their life. They've actually lost 7 in a row. They're 1-8 in the McDavid era in game ones, but they do come in as the best home team in the NHL since Chris Knobloch was hired. They're 27-5-3. And LA, remember at the start of the year, LA set an NHL record. The longest winning streak on the road to start a season, 11 games, and they came one game short of the longest road winning streak at any point in the season, which is 12. But since then, they go 11-0. Since then, they're 11-15-4 on the road. So you got a really good home team, a team that struggled on the road, but they're trying to spread out their offense, it looks like, across all four lines. You think they stick with that if you're Hiller in the Kings, or Will Byfield be back up with Kopitar fairly quickly?
My guess is that he'll be back up with Kopitar fairly quickly, just based on what we've seen from PL Dubois this season, which is (parentheses) not much. But I understand the thought process of trying to make a more balanced lineup. And I think just from a design perspective, you could see the big bodies of Dubois and Byfield together being an interesting combination. I just I guess I would need to see a lot more from Dubois on a consistent nature to believe it, I guess, is the best way to say it. Look, he's got all the talent in the world. He really does. He can do things that so few players in this league can do. His engine is leaves you with serious question.
Yeah, this year does. It hasn't worked out. You know, it's funny how many guys their first year on a new team in lots of different sports, and somehow for whatever reason, it takes a while. Some guys don't, but you see a lot of players that do. And, you know, then they got on the other side for Edmonton. You know, to me, they have some what I would call unnecessary distraction before the playoffs begin. You know, Evander Kane comes out and says he's dealing with a sports hernia, yet back on March 25th, when he missed the game in Ottawa, Chris Knobloch said it was a maintenance day for Kane, and Kane came out the next day and said, no, it wasn't. I was healthy. It's a healthy scratch. But now he says he's had the sports hernia all year long. So I don't discount that he's banged up, but it just, I can't recall a time a player either during or before the playoffs talked about an injury. It's like the NHL normally, you could see a guy take a puck in the face, have six teeth on the ice, and after the game, oh, he's got a lower body injury. You know, like, it's unbelievable the lengths they will go through to not tell you what their injury is. And then Kane comes up, well, I'm dealing with this. It, I don't know, it just seemed very odd to me. Odd time.
Odd or by design? Or is that just Evander Kane's way of making it about Evander Kane? Hey, here's a pile of built-in excuse. If I don't play well, if I'm not at my best this round or these playoffs, it's because I have a sports hernia, didn't you know? What guy on what team does that?
Yep.
Your teammates would lose their minds in the NHL if you came out and revealed your injury before the playoffs even started. It's one thing to talk about it after the season's over, you know, locker cleanout day, and usually you actually have the coach or the manager come out and kind of give the list of injuries and what players are dealing with so that they don't make it about themselves. And here's Kane before the puck even drops. And you're right. I used this line last week in the pod. You can't suck and blow at the same time. Either you were a healthy scratch or you were injured the whole time. Which one was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I just, the timing of it. Saw it. Now, here's the thing about Kane. Kane's a difference maker. He's one of only five players in the NHL who's top 40 in goals and top 40 in hits over the last 8 years, right? Like, he can score, he can hit. The others are Ovechkin, Chris Kreider, Anders Lee, and Jamie Benn. Those are the guys top 40 in goals. You're a top 40 goal scorer. It's like a top line guy, right, in the whole entire league. He can score. There's no question. He's big. He's physical. All that stuff. In the same interview, we talked about how he's had limited opportunities. You know, he's mentioned before his ice time. Now his ice time is down. Last year, he's down about a minute and 55 seconds per game. This year to last year in total time on ice. He's never really been on their first unit power play in Edmonton, so that hasn't changed. You know, he gets on their second unit. His line minutes have changed, you know, combinations. He played with Drysdale, played a little with McDavid, played away from them at times. Foglin, McLeod had a stretch where they took some time with Drysdale. And so, hey, I get if a player, guys always want to play. I have no problem with that, but I don't know. It seems like it's odd. People are now, oh, he should have been on. Everybody's like, I shouldn't say everybody. Some people on Twitter are claiming, well, the owners just should have Vegased him, right? Put him on LTR if he was that injured. And that's where it comes down to. Okay, so if you were that banged up, why didn't you sit out then? Like, why'd you wait till the, you know, final week of the season? Now, he did aggravate it, he said, in the Vancouver game. That was his last game played on the 13th of April, and he missed the final three regular season games, which those two games didn't mean a lot anyway, but still, he got some rest. I also think, I look at the timing of the announcement, Frank, and, you know, Dylan Holloway has played exceptionally well, and he'll start the playoffs in the top nine with McLeod and Perry. And, you know, Kane's on their fourth line to start the playoffs, which could give them an advantage in matchups, you know, even if he isn't 100%.
Or he is kind of does like he did this season and he sleepwalks through it.
Well, yeah, you would hope he would.
He went 21. 21 games without a goal?
No.
I picked him as a sleeper pick, and we picked 16 of them on dailyfaceoff.com before this series started, and one of my guys in Van was Dakota Joshua for the reasons we talked about. But he, you know, in Edmonton, it was like, does a 5 point whatever million dollar player count as a sleeper? Well, he does if he slept walk through a chunk of the season. And I just go back to how important he was to Edmonton's run to the conference final 2 years ago. He led the postseason in goals, tied for the lead.
He had 13 and 15 games.
And they only had 8 of the 16 wins. 13, like, that's how good he was. That's how important he was to their success. Last year, they lose to the Golden Knights. Kane's banged up at the wrong time of year. Hyman's banged up at the wrong time of year. That contributes to why they lose. They're going to need him. Fourth line, second line, whatever line he's on, he has to be a presence.
Yes. Yeah, 100% agree. I think him, and to me, the big X factor for the Oilers, if they go on a deep run, will be the play of Nurse and CeCe, actually. I think, like, you look at, now I know, hey, everybody can say top four defenseman, sure. But, you know, those, Nurse was very good for the first 3 months with Coffey. February, March, not so good. April, after the Dallas debacle, the end of the month, quite well. So they need that to continue because they're going to play a lot of minutes, right? Bouchard and Ekholm can't, you know, you get into the playoffs where it's physical hockey, it's more intense. I just, you know, I don't think you can ask those guys to play much more than they're playing already. And you might even have them play less. Now, obviously they'll play more because some games are overtime. So that averages your time on ice. But, you know, it's like watching Colorado. Like, you look at Colorado, Frank, and in game one, like, their defense just, you know, they gave up too much. They gave up too much quality chances, not shots overall, but quality chances from just some bad defensive reads. And you know what? It killed them. That's why they lost the game, because they controlled so much of it. But when Winnipeg got a chance, it was a grade A chance. And if Edmonton limits that, I think they got a really good chance against LA and to go deep.
Agreed. I think this sets up perfectly for them. I think the whole path sets up perfectly for them. But will they take advantage or will they shoot themselves in the foot?
Quickly, give me your thoughts on what you saw up close and personal last night, Vancouver and Nashville. What stood out for you and how 12 seconds basically changed the entire game?
The 12 seconds did, but that to me, when I think about how the Canucks played, isn't really the storyline. They played a really mature game. I think they showed that they've learned a lot this year. I think it's going to really bode well for them throughout the playoffs. They were down a goal. They never panicked. They looked really comfortable. And they're a team that clearly has the offensive capability to get back into a game. But when you don't press, when you don't open it up and try and desperately get back in the game, you ensure that you've only given up two and give yourself a chance. And I thought that to me was a great sign for the Canucks moving forward, that they seem to be really calm in what could have been a, you know, pressure cooker moment. First playoff game in Vancouver in 9 years. You're down in the third period to a team that's a pretty sizable underdog in the series. And what's your response going to be? How are you going to play? And there wasn't one moment in that game that they looked like a team that wasn't prepared for the moment.
Well, and I think the big thing for Vancouver is, you know, Miller, Pettersson not on the scoreboard, and they score four and win. Now, Quinn Hughes did have two assists, you know, both came on the tying goal and then the game winner. But, you know, Joshua, I know one's empty netter, but still, he gets 2 points. Puis Suter scores a goal. Elias Lindholm, who didn't really have a great, you know, regular season in Vancouver, to put it lightly. You know, he comes up with a huge goal. And I think that, because you know that Pettersson and Miller, well, Miller specifically,
he was really good last night.
Yeah, he was really good, and not just on the score sheet. But I thought, I was more impressed by, like, the first period was fairly cautious, but they only gave up 12 shots, Frank, in the first two periods. Like, you got Demko in goal, who's pretty good. You're going to limit the opposition to that few chances and shots. I think you got a really good chance to win.
I think they're going to be in really good shape. And I think if they continue to play with that same poise, a little bit of opportunistic sense as well, you know, get in on the forecheck 12 seconds later after scoring the goal and all of a sudden the game's flipped. it's early. It's one game in, but I do think that if they play their cards right, they have the chance for this to not be an incredibly long series.
That'll be advantageous for sure. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk to the pod.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to go with a new edition of Buy or Sell on today's podcast. I got a couple of questions lined up for you guys, all playoff themed tonight. And I want to start out with the Islanders and Canes series. Shout out to our friends at Bet365 as well, who have the over under set at a nice 5.5 for game two. I'm going to say no matter how long this series goes, every single game goes under. Frank, you buying or selling on that?
I'm going to sell. There's probably going to be one game that the Canes score five themselves.
That's fair. Greg's?
Yeah, like shoot me. I can't even bet one game under. I never bet the under. It's probably why I'm not a good bettor, but no, I can't. I am definitely selling on that. There'll be a game where there'll be some offense. Please, God help us.
Yeah, I saw our pal Nick Alberga from Leafs Nation tweeted that his favorite springtime tradition, sneaking in a nap during a Canes Islanders playoff series or playoff game on the weekend. Next one I got for you guys, you touched on Connor Hellebuck earlier on, gives up six and the Jets still find a way to win. I'm going to say in this series, he does not allow more than four again. Buy or sell, Greggs?
Oh, I'll sell there too, because, hey, as good as he is, man, Colorado's offense, they will. Nate McKinnon, their speed over to other power play is really good, especially when they get on home. There'll be a game. Now, I guess the caveat is might be an empty netter to get it to five. So are we talking to just four goals with him out? But I'll still say there'll be one other game here where the Avs get five, and not necessarily meaning Hellebuck's playing poorly. I just think their offense can be that high octane when they want to fire it up.
I will buy. I think the Jets are going to get dialed. I think that game was probably a bit of a fluke. And if anything, the guy, I'd say we're going to see at least two more games this series that Georgiev gives up five.
Yeah.
There's clearly the watch the body language. They don't trust him and he doesn't trust them. They're one Nate Mac freak out away from Eustace Annan being in net when he's healthy again.
Well, I do wonder about that. I think if they don't have success in game two, guys, I won't be surprised at all if Annan's there in game three.
Yeah. I think he started the playoffs sick, right?
Yeah.
Next one I got for you guys, sticking with kind of the goaltending theme here, Leafs Bruins, obviously a lot of conversation about, will the Bruins stick with some sort of a rotation as they go through this series, even if they keep winning? Ilya Samsonov obviously got the start in game one for the Leafs. I'm going to say we see all four goalies. So that'll be Wall, Samsonov, and then the two in Boston in this series at some point. Frank, buying or selling on seeing four different goalies in Leafs Bruins?
I'll buy, but on a technicality, because I'm going to say that we see five dressed. I say that at some point during this series, Martin Jones is in uniform for a game.
All right.
Interesting. It's a good question.
Steady, by the way, in the playoffs. Martin Jones is their steadying influence.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that. I will say all four though do play. Yes.
There you go.
Now it might be one. It might be in relief potentially, but I think we see all four of them. Will all four start? Maybe is a better question, but I will say all four make an appearance for sure.
Just a heads up. How many games, just off the top of your head without looking, how many games do you think Martin Jones played this year?
14.
In Toronto?
Yeah. Just don't look.
I'm not looking up. 29, 28,
22. So he played a quarter of the season. Where do you think he ranked among the three in save percentage?
Oh, probably first.
Second.
Okay.
It was Wall 907 in 25 games, Jones 902 in 22 games, and Samsonov 890 in 40 games.
Yeah, I know Jones kind of is what he is for me. He's not,
he's that would be perfectly league average is what that is. 902. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I thought he started hot, but maybe I'm wrong. I thought he started hot and then kind of cooled off, but
that is a wrap on this week's edition of Buy or Sell. Another big shout out to our friends at Bet365. If you open an account with Bet365 today and use the promo code Daily365, you can get in on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365.
I think if Marty Jones is in, Frank, that shows you how much struggles Toronto's in, and they're by that point, it's probably done.
Well, after the way game one went, can you actually rule that out?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really have an issue with the goaltending as much as I had an issue with the skaters for Toronto. I think their skaters have to be better.
I know he was out with injury, but we hadn't brought this up at any point. Do you remember early in the season or last summer, actually, when I mentioned the TJ Brody buyout and everyone in Toronto roasted me and said, buy out TJ Brody. He's our best defensive defenseman. And then he was healthied. Just felt like I needed to, my arm isn't long enough, but it was like, come on, man, really? Like, it was the best buyout ever.
Yes.
It was a buyout of $5 million last summer with no cap change. You got, yeah, for the first year it was zero.
Yeah. Just mind blowing when you think about the cap.
They had a unique opportunity then, should have pulled the trigger. Yeah. Could have spent $5 million on another player.
Yeah. Well, they got, I'll be very interested to see. I would expect Toronto in the first period anyway, because Boston was all over them in the first period of game one. I would think that we would see a much more energized Toronto team tonight, just like Carolina. And then, you know, the other two series, they both get going. So, you know, usually that you come out pretty strong early on. Like I will say, that first period of the Winnipeg Colorado game, if I'm ranking everything, that first period definitely was the best of all of them. I thought it was unreal to watch. And I don't know, like the Dallas Vegas series is the one, you know, I'm very interested to see how that, I have Dallas winning the series, but I'm very curious how that first period goes tonight, Frank. I think it could be an absolute slobber knocker between those two teams.
Bring it on.
Oh, can't wait. And do we have an official date yet, Frank? For the have they announced yet the draft lottery? It's, I know they had said May 6th or 7th, but they still haven't officially announced a date yet.
I said May 6th or 7th. That's all we know. The teams know nothing.
Okay. So still a little odd to me. I don't know why, but I just find it odd that they're
looking for the right playoff window between. Ideally, you do it on a dark night between round one and two.
Yeah, I guess so. But if you have seven gamers, then sometimes it's impossible to do that.
Well, that's why they're trying to decide.
So, I don't know. Just get it over with. Do it. Frank, have yourself a good week. We'll have lots of games to talk about. Will the home domination continue? Home team 6-0 so far. Very different start. Last year, the road teams were killing it early on in the playoffs, but so far, 6-0 for the homers. We'll see if that continues tonight. Enjoy the playoffs, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.